Yes, sorry. Okay. Okay, so Sarah is a new Balas Tshuva. And she's been, you know, she's starting to keep Shabbos. She's been going to shul every week. And she's starting to get used to the run. You know, she's getting used to the davening, getting used to the people that come to the shul. And one morning, she goes to shul Shabbos morning. And slowly, slowly, women start trickling in. And all of a sudden, she looks around, and the entire women section is packed. And she doesn't know what's going on. She's been there before for a bar mitzvah, right? She's seen it get packed. So this is like something beyond. Like, the entire women section is completely packed. And she's wondering, what in the world is happening? Obviously, some kind of event is going on, but she doesn't know what. So she turns to someone else in the room, and she says, can you tell me what's happening here? And they say, it's Shabbat Zohar, right? Parshat Zohar. And, you know, they say it's a special Torah reading. So she's imagining, what do you think this Torah reading is about? You know, maybe it's the Ten Commandments, it's the creation of the world. And they say, no, it's like 10 psukim long. It's just a very quick reading where we just say that we have to remember what this nation Amalek did to us hundreds, thousands of years ago, and we have to destroy them. And you can imagine she's a little perplexed because the room is packed. The entire community is there. And for what? So they can remember that they need to kill out this nation. Right? It's a little bit strange. And if we take a moment to think about it, sometimes when we grow up with something, we don't think about it. But if we take a moment to think about it, it actually is very strange. Right? First of all, you know, who is Amalek? What did they do that was so bad that, you know, we're commanded to completely eradicate them? Right? The Jewish people have many, many enemies, right, throughout Jewish history. Why specifically are we saying that Amalek needs to be destroyed? Right? And secondly, in such a dramatic manner, like every single person of the entire nation of Amalek, man, woman, child, we have to kill out all of them. Right? Again, it's very extreme. And thirdly, this command of revenge against Amalek doesn't have a specific time frame. It's forever. Like it says that it's in Shmot, right? It says, okay, and we'll get to it later. But the door to the door, thank you, that's the important part. That basically Hashem is at war with Amalek forever, for every generation. So we have to really understand what is it about Amalek that we're trying to destroy?
Is that revenge or you said it's revenge?
It seems like it's revenge because we're saying we have to remember what they did and we need to destroy them. So it seems like it's based on whatever they did, right? Now nowadays we don't really know who Amalek is. So Samcheir, the king of Ashur, mixed up all the nations, and we don't know who's Amalek. So technically, on a very technical level, we don't have a command. We can't kill out Amalek, right? And yet, we know that we still have this very public reading of Parshat Zohar every single year. So obviously, there's something deeper beyond the actual killing of the nation. There's something that we need to eradicate, that we need to destroy. Whatever concept, whatever philosophy Amalek represents, we need to destroy that. And we have to understand, what is it that Amalek represents? Now, interesting, the Rambam, the Kesef Mishnah, is a parish on the Rambam in source number 3, actually says that it's not, this command is not on every person in Amalek. It says, She'im kiblu aleihem sheva mitzvot, if there's someone from Amalek who took upon himself the seven Noachai laws, the seven mitzvot b'nei Noach, harei yatsu miklal shivat alamin miklal Amalek, vareihim kibnei Noach k'shirim. So if there is somebody from Amalek who doesn't represent whatever Amalek represents, right, if they took on the seven Noahide laws, they have some kind of moral code, they took on the mitzvot that non-Jews are commanded to keep, so then they're no longer considered to be part of Amalek, we don't need to destroy them. So, right, but they will be considered, they're not within the category of an Amalek personality, we don't need to kill them out. And I would say that this is not the only... Meaning they didn't convert out of Amalek, but they don't have the Amalekness within them. So what this is basically saying is that you might have thought, and I would say that every posuk says this, but according to this, you might have thought that this is really a racial, if you're from Amalek, it doesn't matter who you are, we have to destroy you. And here it's saying, no, if you remove yourself from that Amalek philosophy, then we no longer have a command to kill you. So basically what it's pointing to, again, is this idea that there is something that Amalek represents, some philosophy, some take on the world that we need to eradicate, not Amalek themselves, but whatever they represent. And in order to understand that, I think we first need to obviously look in the Sukkim and see what do we know about Amalek. Okay, so there's two different accounts of Amalek. One is in Sefer Shemot in Parshat Vashalach, when it actually happens, the story of Amalek. And one is in Devarim, which is where we read from, Parshat Zohar, which talks about this command to remember them in this way. Okay, so let's look first in source number one. Let's get to the second paragraph, where it says, Vayavo Amalek, it's pasuk chet. Vayavo Amalek, v'yilachim im Yisrael v'rifidim. So Amalek comes and they fight with Bnei Yisrael in Rifidim. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, b'char lanu anashim, v'tzei yilachim b'amalek. Moshe says to Yehoshua, choose people, we're going to go fight against Amalek. Machar tomorrow, anokin yitzav arosh hagibah. I'm going to go up to the top of the mountain. Yehoshua, you go fight. I'm going to the top of the mountain with my matel, with my stick. Okay, this is all happening. Right, they're in the desert. This is after Kriyat Yam. This is they've been in the desert for a few months now. Okay, and Yehoshua's going to go fight. Vayas Yehoshua kasher amar lo Moshe. Yehoshua does what he's told. V'lachim ba'amalek. U'Moshe Aaron v'chor alu rosh hagibah. And Moshe, Aaron, and Hor go up to the top of the mountain. Vayakasher Yarim Moshe, the Gavar Yisrael. Whenever Moshe would pick up his hands with the stick, Bnei Yisrael would start winning the war. Vikasher Yaniach Yado, the Gavar Amalek. And when he would put his hand down with the stick, then Amalek would start to win. Vayde Moshe Kseidim, Moshe's hands were heavy, Vayitzlu Evan, Vayitzimu Tachsavar, he couldn't hold his stick up the entire time. It was very hard for him to do that all day long. So they took a stone. They put it under his arm. The Aaron and Hor tamchu biyadav. Aaron and Hor are holding up his hand. Yizakad on either side. And so his hands are held up steadily until the end of the day. Yehoshua is successful. He kills out Amalek. Here's the first time you see the command. Write this down. You should remember it. And here Hashem says, I am going to wipe out the Amalek. He says, he's going to do it. Very good. Vayeved Moshe Mizbeach. Vayekar Shmo Hashem Nisi. He makes Mizbeach. Kozer Hashem Nisi. Vayomer Tiyad Al Kiska. Nochama LaHashem V'Amalek Nidro. What we said before, that Hashem has this eternal war against Amalek for generations. Okay, so from this account, obviously it wasn't good that Amalek attacked Bnei Israel, but does it seem like, you know, compared to everything that we know that every other nation has done to the Jewish people, does it seem something so terrible? I think it's not good, but like, you know, they were in Mitzrayim for hundreds of years where they were, you know, slaves and their sons were thrown into the water. You know, you can think of many other nations that maybe could be in a worse category, and here Amalek was actually, they won, the Israel won against Amalek, right? So it begs the question some more. And we're not really told any motive. Why does Amalek do this? Now, if you look in the second... Right, I think Hashem is saying that his hand. It's a good question. Kiyad al kiska nuchama l'Hashem. I want to look that up and get back to you because it's a little bit amorphous, like unclear exactly what does that mean. But it's a good question. I'm going to look at that because Hashem is saying, and I'm not sure what he means by that. Kiyad al kiska. Right. His hand is against Hashem. Interesting. Yeah. It does sound like that. I'm going to look it up because I don't want to say I didn't look into it, but it's a good question with the reason. I can see both sides of it. Okay. Now, let's look at the account in Dvarim where Parsha Sachar is actually taken from. Do you need a sheet? It sounds like he's taking a shvuah and he's saying, by my word, I don't know how to say it in English, but with my hand on my throne, I'm saying that I am going to fight against Amalek, and until that point, my throne is not complete. Okay, anyways, let's look at the account in Devarim. Okay, let's get to the bold. It says, Zachor, there's actually only three psukim. I said 10 before. There's only three psukim that we actually say in Parsha Zachor. Okay, it says, Zachor, Tasher, Asalacha, Amalek, Vedarach, Tetzi, Chem, Mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way out of Mitzrayim. Asher, Karcha, Vedarach, they came, we're going to discuss what Karcha means, but you could say, they chanced upon you on the way. They come to the tail end, to all the weak people. And you were tired and exhausted, and Amalek do not fear God. Okay, the Amalek came to attack the weak amongst you, and you in general, the nation, was very tired at that point, and Amalek was not God-fearing. When Hashem lets you rest, he leaves you alone from all the enemies. When you get to Israel, at that point, you need to erase the memory of Amalek from under the sky, and don't forget. Okay, and again, it's like this very extreme, don't forget, and you have to remember, and don't forget, right? And it seems like this very extreme command. Now, what's the difference between the two accounts? Because one of them, right, is what you say, who wants to, you heard me say it out? Simcha, as opposed to? Right, so in the first one, Hashem says, I'm going to erase Amalek's name. I am in a war against Amalek. And in the second one, it's a command on Bnei Yisrael, Timcha, you need to erase Amalek's name. What's the other difference in the account?
It explains why, what they did, why they did it.
Good. In Shemot, it tells the story of the facts, what happened. In Devarim, it explains why they did it, or more about what they were doing. Now, what would you say the difference between Sefer Shemot and Sefer Devarim are?
Mishnah
Torah. It's Mishnah Torah, which means what?
It's Moshe Rabbeinu telling the story, and he is explaining it there throughout the whole thing. He's giving Mussar, and
very good. Excellent. Okay, so Sefer Shemot is a historical account. This is Nechama Lima brings this down, but it makes a lot of sense, right? Sefer Shemot is a historical account. It gives us the facts. What actually happened? What was the story? Okay? Devarim is Moshe talking. Moshe is now giving his goodbye speech to Bnei Yisrael before he dies. And he's giving him the last words, the last messages before he's going to leave. And therefore, when he talks about Amalek, he's giving them a message. He wants to explain to them, why did we have such a command? What was so bad about what they did? And therefore, he has to explain their motives and who Amalek was. And also, before that, in Shemot, Hashem says, Hashem personally wants to fight against Amalek, but here the directive is on Bnei Yisrael. As Moshe is leaving, he's saying, and you also have an obligation to destroy Amalek. Okay? Okay, so in order to really understand what Amalek's motives were, we have to look at that one pasuk in Sefer Devarim. Wait, what's the pasuk? Wait, it says, Asher karcha baderech v'yizanei b'cha kol ha'nechashalim acharecha v'ata ayit v'yageya v'lo yirei Elokim. Okay, there's really two different approaches. There might be more, but it's two major approaches that I've seen in the Mefarshim about what Amalek represented and what they did wrong. The first one is, I would call it the Asher karcha baderech approach. Okay, we'll discuss what that means. And the second one is the Vatai, the Ageya Velo Yirei Elokim approach. It's two different sections of the pasuk that really refer to what Amalek was doing. Okay, so let's talk first about Asher Karcha Baderech. Okay, look at Rashi. Rashi in source number 4. Davar Acher Lashon Kor V'chom. What does Asher Karcha Baderech mean? It comes from the root Kor, cold. Shayu kol ha'umot yirei'im l'lachim b'chem. All of the nations at this point were scared to fight against the Bnei Yisrael. Why were they scared? What did they just see? Right? And this one comes and fights with them and shows others and gives them a place that they can fight as well. Mashal le'ambati rotaka. This is a mashal to a bathtub which is boiling. She'ain kol birya yechola li'rezi tocha. Nobody can go into it. It's boiling hot. You can't go into the bathtub. Ba ben bilya alachad. Kafat v'yara l'tocha. One guy comes, and he jumps into the water. Av al pishenichla, even though he doesn't care, he totally burnt himself. Hikra otah b'snei achirim. He cooled it off for everybody else so they can go in. Okay, so Rashi extends, extends on this, and he says, v'tam ha'onesh shenash Amalek yoter mikol. I mean, why was Amalek punished more than the rest of the nations? He's now quoting from Az Yashir, right after Kriyat Yamsuf. All of us here, what does it talk about? It talks about all the nations who were so scared, right? It says, Shamu Amim V'Yergazim, all the nations, they were scared. It's Meshed Adom, Moab, Yoshek, Nan, Namogu, right? They all melted. They're all totally scared of Hashem and totally scared of his nation. V'amalek ba mimirchak kimitzgaber al Hashem. And the Amalek comes from far away. They're not even right there. They come as if they're trying to mitzgaber al Hashem. Right? They are the ones who jump into the bathtub. Right? They don't care that they're going to get burned. They want to prove a point to everybody. Don't worry. You don't need to be scared of them. And just by looking at the Chamalibus for a second in verse number 6, she kind of like shows that, built up the whole image. And she says, all the wonders and miracles of Egypt and the Red Sea had come to publicize the exclusive power of God. That was the whole point of the Makos. The whole point of Kriyat Yamsuf was to show the whole entire world the power of Hashem. Indeed, when the children of Israel went out of Egypt, all the nations of the world, with the exception of Amalek, were seized with dread and awe. Mankind as a whole might have taken one great step forward and acknowledged the sovereignty, thank you, of the God of justice and truth, right? It could have been, and it should have been, that right straight from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, the Makos, Kriyat Yamsuf, the entire world is going to recognize Hashem, right? Vayash, Melchav Kol Ha'aretz, right? Everybody would recognize Hashem. That's what should have happened. And what happens instead? But then along came Amalek. Unrestrained by the dread and awe that kept all of the nations of the world in check, jumped, as it were, to use the Midrashic expression, into the boiling cauldron. What was their fear? They were wandering in the, they said, what, this is what Amalek is saying, what is there to fear? They were wandering in the wilderness, weary and struggling. Why should they not be attacked and spoiled? This is the way of the world. In this manner, the moment of awe at the mighty hands of God passed away, and the atmosphere of astonishment at his miracles evaporated. The world returned to the idols of gold and silver, its faith in mortal power and brute force. The opportunity had been lost, and who was responsible? Amalek. Right? It's kind of like, you know, you have a classroom full of kids, right? And, you know, the teacher's giving this inspiring class, or like this inspiring kumzitz going on. Everyone's singing, and they're connecting to Hashem, and like one school kid gets up and says, this is all silly, what are we doing, right? Ruins the entire moment, and that was Amalek. Okay? And where did this come from? Amalek comes, and they introduce this feeling of safek, of doubt. The gematria of Amalek is the same as safek, right? They introduce the feeling of doubt. Maybe all of that, even though it's hard to believe, but maybe all of this makos and all of the kriyat yamsuf, all of that was just by chance, right? Just mikra. It wasn't really coming from a God that's orchestrating the world, and they brought that feeling of safek into the world so that people no longer had to fear God. And how did this happen? What's the smichut parshiyot? What was the section right before this? So that's why I brought in the section that we skipped before, in source number one again. Right beforehand, right, the story of Rephidim. Okay, anyone know what happened? I don't read the whole thing inside. What happened in Rephidim? Water, okay? The Bnei Yisrael were thirsty. They wanted water. They're complaining. Why didn't God make Mitzrayim? We don't need water. We're so thirsty. And Hashem tells Moshe to hit the rock. There's two different versions of hitting the rock, but Hashem tells them, and water comes out. And then at the end, just look at the last pasuk. Vayikrashim makom in pasuk Zayin. So number one, Vayikrashim makom masal meriva. Ariv Bnei Yisrael, v'anetzotam et Hashem, Moshe calls it Masa Meriva because Bnei Yisrael fought against Hashem, Limor, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu im ayin. Is Hashem really amongst us or not? Right? They had that little sense of doubt. I'm sure they didn't, they were just saying it because like, they must have really believed it. They just saw all the miracles, right? They knew Hashem was there, but just this little, I don't know, there's no water here. Maybe Hashem's not really here with us. And that little... They went from, you know, they come to Rephidim, right? They still go to Israel, they go to Rephidim, the angel Mayim Yishtot. And then afterwards, they call the name of the place, they call the place Masa Merida. And then they continue, Amalek comes when they're still in Rephidim. So because they had that little bit of doubt, so now Amalek comes to kind of concretize that, to put that into concrete terms, that doubt. And Rashi, Rashi's verse number, doesn't have a number, but number 6.5. I added it afterwards because I forgot there was actually that Rashi, and I was telling this to my kids and they reminded me. Okay, so in verse number 6.5, he says, Samach Parsha Zu L'Mikra Zeh. Okay, this story of Amalek comes right after Masa Meriva. Lama Tamina Nibi Nisem, Umizuman L'Kosar Feichem. To say to them that Hashem says, I am really always there for you and always giving you your needs. That Tem Omrim, Hayesh Hashem V'Kirbenu Imayin. And you say, is Hashem really with us or not? Chayetem Sha'akelev Ba V'Noshet Atchem V'Atem Shokim Elai V'Tezun Hichanani. I promise now that a dog is going to come and bite you and you're going to cry out to me and then you're going to know where I am. Mashallah Adam Shehikiv Benoach Seifa. This is a story, a mashallah, of a person, a father who had his son on his shoulders, carrying him around. Vayasala Zarek, he goes out. Haya Oto Aben Ruach Seifet Fomer. The son would see something that he wanted, and he would say, Abba, Tolka Seifet, attain me. Give me that, give me that. You give it to him. The King Shkinia, the King Shkisi, the second time, the third time. They met up with another person. Amarlo to Aben, the son said to this other person, Ra'ita at Abba, have you seen my father anywhere?
I don't see.
This boy is riding around on his father's shoulders, and every minute he's saying to his father, can you give me that? Can you give me that? Can I have that? And his father's giving him everything he wants. And he meets another person, and he says, have you seen my father anywhere? Right? Can you imagine? His father's giving him everything, but he forgot that it's his father, right? He doesn't know where his father is. Amarlo Aviv, Incha Yudea Hechan, and his father says, what a chutzpah, you don't know where I am, I'm giving you everything, you're riding on my shoulders, for goodness sake. He throws him off his shoulders, and the dog comes and bites him. Okay, this is a mashal to what happened over here with Amalek, right? Hashem's giving them everything, they were just thirsty, he gave them more, everything they want, Hashem gives them, and they say, Hashem really with me, so Hashem says, okay, you'll lose my protection for a little bit, and Amalek will come, and then you'll remember who's taking care of you. But it's this shemus of doubt, this feeling of suffix, maybe yes, maybe no, that is concretized by what Amalek does to them. And how does Amalek introduce this concept of doubt to the world? Through Mikret, right? He says, he's showing, what I said before, he's showing the world that, you know, really maybe the entire world is just a coincidence. Everything that happens is just a coincidence. The water split, it was just a coincidence. There's no one really running the world.
You could say that for a story.
Very good, we're going to get to that. Very good, we're leading right into that. Excellent. You see this in Purim. Okay, so hold that thought, it's going to be at the end. Okay, and this sense of suffix and mikra is really found in each and every one of us, okay? Hopefully not in a major way, but we all have a little, there's always this question, was this really orchestrated by God, or maybe it just happened? Maybe this terrible thing, or this great thing, whatever happened in my life, it's just how the world works, right? And we need to remember, we need to get rid of that feeling of mikra. If you switch around the letters of mikra, what does it say? Rach mei Hashem, right? Really everything is coming from Hashem. And the Sfat Emes, the Gera Rebbe, source number 7, he says, the Ikar Perish Zechira, Ki Pnimius Hachiyus. What does it mean to remember? When you remember something, you are basically, you're awakening your inner consciousness. You're paying attention, okay? As opposed to, right, when you live a life of Mikra, it's a life of Arai. Things just happen. You're not really paying attention. It's, everything is kind of happenstance. And when you're focusing and you're remembering, it's the exact opposite. So he says the way to kind of turn around to turn around Amalek is to live a life of awareness, right? Not live our life in this derech harai, in this casual, not thought out way. So again, so our job in destroying Amalek mindset is to transform all mikra into rach mei Hashem. So that's all approach number one. Good so far? Okay, approach number one, Amalek. The thing that Amalek did that we really need to destroy is this mindset of Mikra, of Safek, of there's not really Hashem running the world. That's one. Okay? Good so far?
Okay.
Excellent. Okay. So we're on to approach number two. Okay. Approach number two is taken by the Barbanel and other Mefarshim. And if you look in source number 8, okay, so basically he talks about really the issue with Amalek, that the Amalek sin really lay in the lack of humanity that Amalek displayed. Look in source number 8. Okay, it says, "Be'amro zechor tasher asal l'cham malik b'derech, ki nei bi'irsham shasal malik k'neged Yisrael arba dvrim migunim." Amalek did 4 terrible things to Bnei Yisrael. Ha'echad sh'anashim yilchamu bo'yveihem. When do people usually fight against their enemies? Imu hadilat artzam mehem, maybe to save their country, o l'chvosh et areihem, or to capture a city. Aval Amalek ba'li l'chem mibli siba. Right, we're not told the reason because there wasn't a reason. The way of the world is that there are wars, but usually there's a motive, and the motive is usually to protect a country, to conquer a city, not just stam, right? Which is what Amalek thinks. Habet, she'im ha'yot mi'minhag ha'malachim haba'im li'lachem v'yveyem. The minhag of the world, when a king comes to fight against an enemy, she'ishlechu v'hodiyah lahem bi'atam l'machamah. They would send a message to tell the other nation that they're about to fight. Le'mor hachinu v'nitra'e panim. Prepare yourself, tomorrow we're coming to fight against you. Amalek doesn't give him any warning. He just chances upon them, right? He just hops onto them and starts fighting. Hashishi, the most important, Shiloh Asar Kosli Lachim Yisrael Panim Panim. He didn't have the courage to fight against Bnei Israel face to face. Who did they fight against? The back. He purposely went to attack from the back. Who's at the back? The weak, the old, the slow, right? They fought from the back. I left up the fourth one. I don't remember what it was anymore, but I didn't pull it here. But I mean, they are about to be both. Because of these reasons, they needed to be destroyed. Okay, and Rashi says, okay, look at the Smicha Parshiot over here. It's always interesting to look. It's not random how the different stories are placed in the Torah. So we saw before in source number one how the two things were very connected. Look in Devarim, source number two, what happens right before Parshat Zachor? It says, Lo yeh lecha b'kischa evan ve'evan gdolat tana. You shouldn't have in your pocket a big stone and a little stone. What are they talking about here? Right? These weights, they used to use a measure, right? When you're dealing in business, you have to be very honest. Lo yeh lecha b'kischa ifa ve'ifa gdolat tana. Again, the same idea. Evan shlima v'tzedek yeh lecha, ifa shlima v'tzedek yeh lecha, leman yarichu yemecha l'adama. You have to have all these honest weights in order that you can stay on the land for a long time in Israel. It's abominable, it's disgusting to Hashem, anybody who tries to cheat other people. And what happens right afterwards? Amalek. So what does Rashi say there? Like, how are those connected? They don't seem connected at all. Right? But Rashi says, we're back now in source number 9. It says, Zachor et asher asalacha. Im shikarta v'midot v'mishkalot, if you lie in measurements, you should be worried that you're going to be destroyed by the enemies. Now, seemingly, this Rashi is a little bit perplexing because it sounds like what Rashi is saying is that the reason why Amalek came to them is because they weren't honest in business. Now, let me ask you, they're in the middle of the desert. What business were they doing in the desert? Right, so it seems a little bit out of place. But what he's actually saying is, look at Rav Hirsch inside. Rav Hirsch is... I love Rav Hirsch because he always gives like very big ideas and explains in a very beautiful way, in a very relevant way what's going on. So look at Rav Hirsch. She says, "Hamitzvah kodemet hishlima et tziur hatmuna hidialit shel Yisrael." The mitzvah before of the weights that we were just looking at before completes the picture of the ideal picture of the nation of Israel. Zehu am mitrachek mikol avel mikol nitzul ra'ash al yomut adam l'chaveru. The ideal picture of Bnei Israel, and maybe it's not always true, unfortunately, but the ideal picture of how our nation should be is a nation that that never tries to rule over another person. Even if it's only to try to like trick a person or oppress a person for a moment. The people of this nation will not take advantage of the trust of another person. Because if you don't have that basic trust, you can't live together in a society. These are the last lines the Torah draws of the picture of the personality of the nation. Okay, this is basically, as I said before, Devarim is Moshe's goodbye speech. Okay, and what's Moshe doing? He's describing, this is the ideal. This is what the Jewish nation is supposed to look like. Okay? Make sure that you don't cheat in business. Make sure that you have trust amongst each other. Make sure that you don't oppress people that are weaker than you. In the national personality of the nation, these are the lines that should light up. Right? It should be that we care about other people. We care about their feelings. We take into account what they're thinking. We help out other people. We do chesed with other people. And if you look at the last few parshiyot of the Torah, this is what Moshe emphasizes over and over again. Remember, I'm about to leave you. You're becoming a nation. You're going to go into Israel. Remember who you are. Remember what is inherent in what our nation is supposed to represent. And who do we contrast this with? Amalek. Simchat yilato hirak becherav gavato v'rimisat kochalash chaser magin. Simchat yilato, the essence of his happiness is rak becherav gavato v'rimisat kochalash chaser magin. It's taking his sword crushing, using his pride to trample, to crush anybody who is weaker than him. כאשר העם של קיים החובה צעד הצעד את האדון הראשון בהיסטוריה, as this nation takes its first steps in history, as the Jewish people take their first steps in history, כבר התייצב המלאק נגד דו ואיבה. Right away, he comes against them, המלאק. וכבר נאמר למלאק שם in שמוק, מיד עם ניסיונו הראשון להגיע לישראל, it's called the Amalek right away over there. Shatid hu v'hiba'ed mizekar Amalek. This was actually a message to Amalek. Even Hashem says to them, I'm in a war against you, right? He says, you should know that you're going to be destroyed from amongst the other nations. HaTorah chozeret maskira lo ata et hanigud hazeh le'etzem mahotel. And now the Torah comes back and reminds them about this nigud, about this contrast, how Amalek is a contrast to the very essence of the Jewish people. Le'bal yishkach oto le'olam, the mitzvah of erasing Amalek and remembering what they did and erasing them is really the mitzvah of remembering who we are, right, as opposed to them. Erasing that whole concept of Amalek, of oppressing those who are weaker than us and living up to our own ideals. Okay, interesting. What is Amalek called? What's the description that was used there? The Lo, Yirei, Elohim. Okay, and usually when we talk about Yirei Elohim, you think about someone who's God-fearing, right? But Professor Nachum Sarna, Professor Tanakh, says that the word Yirei Elohim is used in Tanakh in very specific cases. Does anyone know any examples?
Abimelech, I think, no, that they weren't...
Good. Okay, when Avram goes down to Gerar, and he has to pretend that Sarah is his sister and not his wife, and Abimelech says to him, why did you do that? Why did you feel the need to do that? And he says, I have a topic over here, let me find it. He says, Rak'in Yirat Elohim b'makum hazeh. He said, because I knew that this is not a place of morals. Sorry, let me preface that. So what he said, when is Yirat Elohim used? It's used to describe somebody who has the opportunity to oppress someone weaker than himself, and instead doesn't do that, but lives up to higher standards, to morals. Okay, so he says there was no... It says Yirat there, right? Very good, very good, very good. Yeah, I didn't even. I'm sure there's more. I don't have that one, but that's a good one. Okay, right. That Avram could have killed Yitzchak, but he didn't do it. Right. Or what? He's prepared to. Okay. But you know, this is, so in this example, right? So, so he says, I knew this is a place where there's no morals. That people, they take advantage of those who are weaker than them for their own personal gain. There's no morals. I have to do it. Where else? Thinking of trying, right? The Mialdot, right? Power commands the midwife that they have to go and kill baby boys, and they don't listen. And then the Torah says why, right? Because that's your ena Mialdot et Elokim. Now some of Parshim say that means, oh, that's how we know that they were Jewish midwives because it's your God. But some Parshim say no, they were Egyptian. What does it mean that it's your ena et Elokim? It means that they had the opportunity. They could have just killed the boys. It would have been better in their best interest to do that, but they had a higher standard. They had morals. They were moral people. A couple other examples I just think is interesting. When Yosef, in Mitzrayim, when the brothers come down, and they don't know yet that he's Yosef, and he says, go back and bring Binyamin and just leave one of your brothers here, and they're scared to do it, right? And he says to them, Zot asu v'chiyu et Elokim ani yarei. What's he saying to them? He's not saying, I'm Jewish. They don't know yet that he's Yosef. He's not saying, I believe in your God. He's saying that, don't worry, I'm not going to do anything wrong, because even though I have the power to do it, I am the second in command in Mitzrayim, I'm not going to do anything because I have higher morals. And finally, right, the mitzvah of with a blind person, not just a stumbling block in front of a blind person, it was ne'ider, lo titin nechshol ve'yaretem alokecha, right? A blind person is the extreme example of somebody that anybody can take advantage of because they can't see anything. And the fact that you're not going to do that shows that you have, again, higher standards. So this is a Amalek, someone who, they're lo yirei Elokim, it means that they don't have any morals, right? They're prepared to trample on anyone to get what they want, right? They'll trample on the weak, they'll do whatever they want as long as it is good in their best interest, that's what they're going to do. They don't have any morals. And so the command to destroy a Amalek is really telling us that we need to remove from ourselves any, hopefully we're not a Amalek, but any little bit of, I don't want to say immoral, because it's a better word for it. Like any behavior that
take advantage,
right? And to live a life of integrity as described in the first part of the parak, as opposed to the way that Amalek lived. Okay, and I think that we can really understand the whole mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek, of erasing Amalek, on both levels. I think that they don't contradict each other, right? On the one hand, the first thing that we remember from them is that we have to eradicate this idea of safek, of mikre. We have to remember that Hashem is orchestrating every single part of our life, And secondly, we also have to remember that as a nation and as individuals, we need to live to a higher standard and not act in the way that Amalek did. And so the question is, now we need to understand, is why Daska do we read this before Purim? Well, what's the basic answer first? The basic answer, what do we all know? Why do we read about Amalek before Purim? Because Haman is supposedly descended from Amalek. Okay, so that's on the basic technical level. But more than that, now that we understand what we're trying to get rid of, how does Haman represent Amalek? So now, look, friends, are you?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, because you would think that it was the whole story for him was a mikreh. And the second thing is because they were people who were the Fazar and Farad at that time that Haman was able to, because they did not help each other.
Okay, very good. Okay, so we're going to take it on both levels, okay? Right, how does Haman represent Amalek? Number one is that his whole being was one of chance, right? How does he decide which date is he going to kill out the entire Jewish people?
He peeled poor,
right? That's what Purim is based on, right? He chooses from a lottery. Can you imagine any nation, right? They're choosing a very important date. They're going to kill out an entire nation. They're not going to open up a calendar and figure out what else is happening at that time. Like, there's not going to be anything other than a lottery. Right? But for him, everything is about chance. Everything's mikreh. So whatever comes out, that's a good day. Good. Okay? And the entire story of Purim, as you say, is really a story which is, we don't see any big miracles, right? It's all lots of random stories that seem to be chance. It's like, you know, when they were living in it, they didn't realize what was happening. It's only afterwards when we look back and we realize, wow, Hashem's hand was there all the time, but Hashem's hidden, right? And so this story comes to tell us, it counteracts the whole idea of Amalek and of Haman and tells us that Hashem's hand is there behind the scenes at every single moment. There's no mikreh. Even things that look like mikreh, even though the story happens very naturally and things seem to just be happening in a certain way, we can see very clearly at the end that obviously Hashem was orchestrating the whole thing. And that's a lesson to us in our own lives in general, that we should know that every single thing that happens to us in life, even though we don't understand it at the moment, when we look back, you know, at 120, we'll be able to see how all those pieces were really orchestrated from above in a very, very specific way. And secondly, we said that Amalek represents this idea of oppressing those that are weaker, and that's what Haman did, right? He wouldn't let anyone step in the way. He wanted to get to the top, and he was prepared to kill an entire nation in order to do that, right? As long as it gets him higher and higher on the totem pole. And what did we do to counteract that? Well, so first of all, I didn't think of the idea before. Brenda said that how did the Purim story happen? It's because we were Zara, Mithurabi, and Amin. We weren't a nation that was cohesive. We weren't helping each other out, right? We had a little bit of that Amalek in us, and we counteract it by, what are the mitzvah of Purim?
Mishloach,
my note. But the note of Yonim is the mitzvah that every single person that puts his hand out to you, you need to give him money, right? You don't question. We're helping everybody. We're trying to take care of the weak and the poor. Okay, so good. And one last question. When do we read it? We don't read it on Purim. We read it on Shabbos before. Why Shabbos? And why don't we just read it on Purim? Why read it on Shabbos? So, again, looking back at our two things, so we can understand from what Shabbos represents, why it's important to read it on Shabbos. So, first of all, Sfas Emes points out that Shabbos is a time of menucha, of rest, which is a time when we have that serenity to rest and relax. It's a time that we can really think and introspect, right? And the Pesach in Devarim, if you remember the words, it says, Vahaya Vahaniyach. Good. When Hashem, when does this mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek take place? Not when they're in the desert. It's when you come to Israel and all the nations are not bothering you anymore. You're ready to relax. Right? You have time to think. That's when is this issue of Mechiyat, this command of Mechiyat Amalek. When you're on Shabbos, when you have that time to think, you can actually counteract this idea of mikra and just happen to see that you can actually really concentrate. That's when you can do it. It's the optimal time for counteracting a life of mikra. And the Tosha Rebbe points out that the word zachor, right, is in both. Right, we have zachor at Asher Asa Lecha Amalek, and we also have zachor at Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. Right, so Shabbos is the ideal time to really counteract what Amalek represents. And where do we see this? So, what is Shabbos all about? What do we? What?
The opposite of Amalek.
Right. What is it? What do we celebrate on Shabbos? What are we recognizing? Hashem, we recognize the creation of the world. We recognize that Hashem is still involved in the world. You see what I'm saying? We recognize that we're taking a break from our own work. Right? During the week, we're all caught up, and we think we're running the show. Hashem, we take a break. And that's the point when we're able to really recognize who's really running the show. It's really not Mikra. It's really, there's no suffix there. It's really coming from Hashem. So Shabbos is the ideal time to do this. And number two, according to our second opinion, you know, during the week, you're at the workforce. It's just like everyone's trying to get to the top. It's rat race, right? And it's pushing each other down. Hopefully not. You should also, during the week, you should be asking, right? But on Shabbos, it's the time. It's like the ultimate equalizer. Right? On Shabbos, you go to shul. And who's in that minion? There could be the garbage man. There could be the top, I don't know, high-tech guy, right? There could be everybody together. Everybody recognizes that we're all in this together. We're all serving Hashem together. There's no levels, right? There's no, you're weak and I'm higher. And no, we're all serving Hashem together. And in the Kiddush, right, it says, Lo tasem melecha, atav vincha vitecha, avtecha v'amecha. Right? Nobody's doing melecha. Not you, not your kids, not your servants. We're all together, right? And so Shabbos, again, also comes to counteract this idea of oppressing the weak, because we understand we're like, once we understand that we're Hashem's in control, it really comes together. We know, like from the first one, right? We know from the first opinion, right? We know Hashem's in control and Hashem's running the world. So then it kind of leaves, there's no oppressing the weak there, because we're all in this together. We're all on the same level. We're just all just serving Hashem. And in Hashem, we can fulfill this year the mitzvah of Mechiyat Amalek by both eradicating this idea of tafek and mikra, and this concept of oppressing the weak, and in this way we can come into Purim ready to counteract all of the evil forces of Haman and his ancestors. So, yeah. Thank you for your insights. I helped out there.
I'm sorry.
No, they're good.
Just, and then you really put your finger on it. It was Hashem behind everything. And she said, the message is that we've got to be proactive and we've got to do. And
you know, she gave enough to the.
She did not.
I think that, like, her here was like amazing. Right, there was missing that one paragraph, like after that one little section.
That's right.
But
yeah,
I hear that.
Of that, and I'm very happy.
What did she say to you? She was like, how about you?
I don't really know. You know, it was the end of the day. I didn't want to keep us too long, and I didn't want to belabor it. And it was like, I guess it took me time to work it out, but it was really, but you did a great job.
Where are you coming from?
Belgium.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holland. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Holland, okay. I mean, you're not flying in from Holland, so that's cool also. But you're coming from Beersheba.
Yeah. But I lived here first in Hebron in Sufia.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you didn't come here from Sufia, did you?
No,
You came here from Sufia?
From Sufia also here for 6 years. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So how often do you come, like, once you come on Sundays?
Only on Sundays.
Wow. Amazing. You drive or you take a bus? How do you? You take the bus?
Yeah.
How long does it take you?
I don't have a car. Because I'm already in my beginning ages and then you don't drive a car.
So how long does it take? Like 2 hours? How long does it take you to get here?
3 hours, no?
Well, I leave my house 5:45. And depends on if the bus can drive on or not.
Wow. That is really dedication. And you stay the whole day?
No, I go now back and then I'm at home at 4:00.
Wow. Wow.
Because I have to go some shopping, but I can't get in Beersheba that I...
Got it. Wow, so basically you come for Rabbi Bredewitz and for Dovey?
Yeah, on the Sunday morning.
Wow.
Oh,
you will. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Have a good day.